We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Did what Swaggy P do. Teammates played great and we came out with the victory, you know?
I'm just trying to really get my NBA 2K rating up.
I just cannot take it.
You know, it's 12:02 right now. If they want to fire me at 12:05, I'll go home and find something to do. I'll have a good day.
Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast presented by FanDuel.com. Nick Whalen here with James Anderson. It is Thursday, April 11th, which means, of course, it's Ramon Sessions' 33rd birthday, the 56th overall pick in the 2007 NBA draft. For those not familiar, that's the Alondo Tucker, AC Law, Javaris Crittenden draft. Today is one of the few days of the entire NBA calendar, James, where we don't have any games. It's kind of the biggest lull in the schedule, I guess, as we move from the regular season, which wrapped up last night, to the postseason, which begins, as it always does, on Saturday with four games, and then four games on Sunday as well. So the schedule came out actually a little earlier this year than it has in years past. It was out around 12:30. I look back, last year it didn't come out till after 2:30 a.m., so that was kind of nice. But as you and I were discussing before we started here, not exactly the most intriguing bracket on either side. You know, it's always a little bit tough to get fired up about every matchup in round one, but not exactly thrilled how things shook out, especially in the Western Conference. But we'll get to that in a little bit. First, a couple of news items. Dave Jaeger out in Sacramento as of this morning. Kings improved their win total. I think he was on, you know, maybe not the short list, but at least most people's list of candidates for coach of the year, given how much of a jump that team made. And I think especially relative to the expectations they faced. But at the end of the day, not really all that surprising that he's out, given the way that, you know, his relationship has gone, not only with management in Sacramento, but also in Memphis.
Yeah, I guess it can't be surprising just given what we knew about the friction there, but I just struggle to see how this team kind of maintains the strides they made. I mean, it's a pretty appealing job, but like how many, like Dave Yeager's a really good coach.
Right.
Like how many coaches are available that are as good as him that would come in and just kind of pick up where he left off with, because I think you kind of have to keep right. that same offensive system. I mean, that just unlocked so much for them. So like, are you just hoping that someone comes in and does everything he was doing, but it's someone that you can actually get along with and will actually play the guys you tell him to play? Like, I guess
think
that's
so, right?
Hope, but
I mean, I don't know what justification you can make other than, you know, he just didn't get along with Vlade, who, you know, coincidentally they're extending now. And obviously this was kind of his choice, but in terms of results, I mean, 12 more wins over last season, individual improvement from guys like Fox and Hield. I know there were clashes, you know, they got off to that hot start by Kings standards when they were like 500 through the first month. And I mean, this, the initial clash, you know, between Yeager and the front office was that front office members were coming to practice and basically telling him, you need to play Marvin Bagley more, you know, over Nemanja Bjelica at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe they were partially right because Bagley ended up being pretty decent. Obviously he has his flaws defensively, but I think that early in the year, you know, Yeager wasn't comfortable throwing Marvin Bagley out there for 28 minutes a night, and he was still getting run. I mean, he was playing 17, 18 minutes, but I think at that point, you know, management was more focused on development as opposed to winning games, and not many coaches, especially a veteran coach like Yeager, you know, are necessarily able to buy into that, especially early in the year.
Well, I don't know what you could look at from what Yeager has did in his tenure there that would suggest he's bad at developing young players. I just think that in his estimation, that doing the lineups he was using gave them the best chance to win. And I don't know how you'd argue with that either. Like, I mean, you can't win almost twice as many games as you were projected to win by Vegas and then say that the guy like mishandled this and this
right.
and this, especially when like he has De'Aaron Fox on his team who it might have made the biggest leap from year one to year two of any player in recent memory. And you have like Harry Giles is like a success story. Bagley
Scal
ends up
went
being
for 35
a success
last
story.
Night.
Yeah. Like it's all their young players have like up arrows next to their names and they won twice as many games as they were supposed to win. So I just don't know how you could, what you're trying to pin on him other than the fact that he maybe just doesn't respect you. And I would say he probably shouldn't necessarily respect you.
Right. I mean, we certainly don't know the full story behind the scenes, and I'm sure that's a big part of it, but you really can't argue with the on-court results. And I think maybe the biggest point in favor of Yeager, you know, if you want to make the case that you can say, you know, the Kings weren't going to go win the title this year anyway, they should be focusing on development, they don't even own their own pick. Like, there's no reason whatsoever to be upset that, you know, if you're management to look and say, we didn't want to win 39 games this year, we wanted to focus on the lottery. That's not an option whatsoever. If that pick lands at one, it goes to Philly. If it lands anywhere else, it goes to Boston. So there was no motivation, at least in my mind, you know, where obviously they ended up falling short of the Western Conference playoffs. You know, with about a month left, it was pretty clear that's how it was going to go. But they're not one of those teams where you look back and say, wow, this was really dumb for them to go all in because, you know, now they've ruined their draft pick, which in their case is non-existent. But again, none of this is all that surprising. It's the Sacramento Kings. But like you said, this is still a very appealing job. This is not what could be said the last five times the Kings did something like this, you know, firing a head coach out of nowhere when it was basically DeMarcus Cousins and this collection of random veterans and cast-offs. Now you have a really nice young core in place. You know, you're in position salary-wise to add to that young core at some point. You know, they haven't exactly been a free agent destination for people not named Rajon Rondo and Zach Randolph in recent years. But I think they're on their way up. You have a new arena. That's a better job to me on paper than the Lakers job, right? I mean, there are obviously perks that come with the Lakers job. But in terms of pure basketball, not having to deal with LeBron.
I don't think the Lakers job is as good as a lot of people are making it out to be just because of all the baggage that comes with it. Like if you could just kind of exclude yourself from all of that noise and never have to manage those egos and just kind of coach the 15 players on your roster, then it's a pretty cool job because you have one of the best players in the world. But it's just, if I was a really good coach or a really good GM, that's not the job I would want out of the jobs that are probably going to be open this offseason, just because I don't think it would be that fun.
Right. I mean, there's inherent pressure that comes with being the head coach of the Lakers. I wouldn't say there's necessarily more pressure now than in the past, but all eyes are going to be on you more than they've ever been. You know, like this, the Lakers have gone from being, you know, always a marquee story because they're the Lakers to adding LeBron, you know, gaining even more kind of national pub. And now with everything that's happened over the last week, I think that's just been amplified. And now the coaching search is going to take center stage. What you said about the coaching job, does that apply to the job vacated by Magic Johnson? Like the president of basketball ops, like is that still a really appealing gig?
I don't think it's that appealing.
I mean,
look at every like front office situation that has accompanied LeBron James's movements. Mm-hmm. And you're never making your moves. You're making his moves / his agency's moves. You're overpaying guys you don't want to pay. I mean, you have the benefit of him, you know, kind of being at rock bottom from a bargaining standpoint. Like, he can't just say, like, all right, we're doing it this way, like, because you're coming off a year where you didn't make the playoffs, and you've got him under contract. So, you know, you might have more freedom to kind of do what you want to do, but you also just have the Brandon Ingram thing. Mm-hmm. You really have to make a bunch of shrewd signings. Like, if they had the type of offseason that, like, John Horst had this past year, then maybe you look like a genius. And, well, maybe it's appealing because it's kind of the executive version of replacing Jason Kidd, where you, like, could just come in and just do some just basic smart things, and like it's gonna look so much better because the past regime just made horrible move after horrible move. So maybe it's appealing in that sense. Like, you could win executive of the year. It's like, oh, look, he made these two great signings, and the Lakers got the 4 seed. Like, maybe that part of it's appealing, but I would rather just have complete power to just do exactly what I wanted to do without having to answer to LeBron.
I think the Lakers' job, no matter what position in the organization, is always going to carry appeal for certain people, but I don't think it's this universal, it's the Lakers, no matter what job I have now, I'm leaving it because it's the Lakers. Like, the names that were starting to come out after Magic stepped down the other night were, and these are not confirmed, obviously, but people were throwing out, you know, Masai Ujiri, Sam Presti, Pat Riley. I've seen, you know, Spo to L.A. now, like, Why would any of those guys leave the position that they're in right now? You know, I just don't think it's worth the risk at this point. I don't know what the benefit is, especially when if things go right. I don't think people are going to say Sam Presti saved the Lakers. It's if the Lakers win the title in 2 years, it's going to be LeBron's title, right? And whoever else is alongside him.
Yeah, I just don't. Yeah, I don't see the appeal when you're that much of a made man. Like. Mm-hmm. It just seems like I think David Griffin, if you just get David Griffin and keep Luke Walton, I think that's a really good kind of core of people making the decisions, because mm-hmm. everyone kind of knows each other then, and, you know, Griffin knows exactly what he would be getting into with that.
Yep.
And he, you know, he probably can't do better than this Lakers job.
No.
So, like, I think that it's a good fit in that sense. Like, suggesting that all these just amazing GMs in other situations are going to want to, like, mm-hmm. introduce themselves to this circus when you don't, it's not, like, from a talent standpoint, it's not as appealing as I think a lot of people think, just because you don't know how good LeBron's even going to be next year. You don't know how good he's going to be in 2 years. You don't know which players you're getting to come play with him, because you already kind of know that none of the top guys from this year's free agency are going to want to go there. So it's just, it's kind of, and you have these kind of two competing timelines of, like, the young players. Yep. They're not going to be ready to win anytime soon, but you need to try to win because you have LeBron. So it's kind of a mess.
Right. And with LeBron, I mean, I think David Griffin is probably an exception. He's had success with LeBron. I think he's someone who would welcome, you know, the opportunity to build around LeBron. But if you're a GM who, you know, someone like Masai, who, you know, has kind of made a living on charting his own course, you know, things like that, do you really want to come and, like, you have to, you know, you have to build around LeBron no matter what. You don't get to build the team you want. You have to build around this guy for at least 2 years. And we can, you know, LeBron is under contract for 4 years, but the fourth year is a player option. So all of a sudden, if things don't work out next year, LeBron's a free agent to be in, you know, in 2021, and you're back to the same circus that it's been the last 5 years.
I think one guy that you could see maybe taking that move is, like, Neil O'Shea or like someone sure. kind of that caliber where it wouldn't be crazy if he got fired in like 2 years yeah, anyways. Right. Like, so he would just be kind of jumping to yeah. a different situation where he'd have more of a leash. Mm-hmm. And like that would make sense to me. But yeah, like Bob Myers, like how insane
UCLA,
would you have to be? Like, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, he loves LA. It's like, yeah, everyone loves LA. Right. He lives in San Francisco. He can go to LA whenever he wants.
Yeah, when you have that kind of money, I don't think it really matters. Yeah, I that was one of the funnier ones. Like, he's going to leave.
Like, that's the best, Warrior. Like the best front office situation of all time.
That
like.
To me is I reacted the same way when I heard that to when people say Klay Thompson's leaving the Warriors for the Lakers.
Yeah, like, no.
Give me one good reason why that would happen other than. He has a family history in the city of Los Angeles. I think the Lakers luster has worn off to the point that just doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, and you don't know. I mean, you would need a massive contract to go there if you're yep. one of these big names, but you also don't know how much they're willing to kind of invest in just revamping the whole framework of that organization. Right. Like, they supposedly have like about the fewest members of a front office that there is in the league. Yeah. The facilities need to be like kind of reworked and everything. It's just a big mess that I wouldn't yes. want to jump into unless I was kind of on shaky ground myself.
So you wouldn't take the job?
I think
I could do like a Magic Palinka.
Hey, if they gave me a blank check and maybe yeah. I would take it.
Okay, fair. So this past week, last night, less than 24 hours ago, we saw Dirk for the final time. Dwayne Wade for the final time. Dirk's was a little more subdued. I mean, the Mavs put on a big production earlier this week and had a bunch of legends there, which was cool. I mean, Dirk has kind of been the complete opposite in terms of how he's handled this final season relative to Wade. I'm kind of with, I forget who it was. I think it might've been Vince Carter on TNT the other night was saying, I don't think Dirk wants to retire. I think everyone assumed he wants to retire and now he kind of felt forced into it. And
yeah.
I'm not saying, I think it was probably closer to 50-50, but I don't think Dirk's mind was made up whatsoever. And I think he kind of felt pressured. On the other hand, Wade has been pretty secure in his decision and he's made it pretty public. Melo, LeBron, CP, we're all in Brooklyn.
He's a pretty shy guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't like attention. He doesn't want to make it all about him.
He didn't make a shirt with tour stops of his final year. He didn't orchestrate that intro video. Look, it was just all spontaneous.
He's just happy to be part of a team. Yep. He's not...
he actually said after the games, like, you couldn't script an ending like this. It was like, you literally scripted this entire ending. You scripted the last 200 days.
The whole season's been a script.
Like, no one could script this. Like, you and your team scripted this. But, whatever. I mean, Dwayne Wade, we'll get into him in just a second. But two things. The table jump.
Right.
He tried to kind of recreate.
I think you could script the table jump a little better.
Yeah, well, that was clearly scripted, too. He was planning, which it actually would have been kind of cool if he had done it correctly.
That would have been a really cool moment, especially if you're like a Heat fan, if he just like gets up there and it's awesome. But then it just...
Which it was at first. Yeah. He hopped up there, and then I think the cloth on the table started to slide a little bit, so he had to hop back down. He's like, all right, I'm going to get back up. Slips on the cloth again. Like,
goes tumbling forward.
Slams really hard, like almost like a pro wrestling type of impact on this table. Possibly damages some sound equipment on there. And he had a mic on, so you could hear him like yelp, like this just noise that I'd never heard anyone make before. So that was great. The attempted alley-oop though, I think it was on Tuesday in his final game in Miami. My God, people were really getting on. Of course, of all people, it was Haywood Highsmith, which doesn't even sound like a real name. Haywood Highsmith of the 76ers was defending Wade pretty closely at the time, as he should have been. It was a fast break. Right. Haywood Highsmith is a guy that when he gets in the game, he's not just going to like loaf around because he's Haywood Highsmith. Right. And people were getting on him for like trying to break up this self alley-oop, which one is insane. Two, Dwayne Wade should be thanking Haywood Highsmith for doing that, because if you watch that clip.
He wasn't finishing that.
I don't even know if he was going to lay it up. Like it's not like Highsmith caught him in midair and like shoved him to the ground or like committed a flagrant. Like, Dwayne Wade threw the ball basically just inside the three-point line, was planning to take off from just inside the free throw line and somehow dunk this home. It was not going to be close whatsoever. I think Haywood Highsmith actually saved him from what would have been an even more embarrassing moment.
So, one of my favorite all-time video clips, the whole Dwayne Wade failed dunk and scores table thing reminded me of is when, do you remember when Texas Tech introduced Tubby Smith on the motorcycle and then he like wiped out on the motorcycle? Like, that's what it kind of reminded me of. Like, there's nothing better than when like something is tried to be like very staged and then it just goes awry. Like, that's always great.
I remember watching that, and you could tell as soon as Tubby emerged from the tunnel, like he's going way too slow. And he's just like, you know, his arms are locked. I've never ridden a motorcycle. Don't ever plan to. I'm not trying to criticize that. But, like, it was very clear, even as someone who doesn't know motorcycles, like, this guy's going down.
Yeah.
And that he did. Did he end up leading them to a national title? I don't remember. I don't think he did. Where is Tubby Smith right now?
He's
coaching somewhere, isn't
he? Yeah, he's coaching for, like, a tiny school. I can't remember.
He was recently hired as the men's basketball coach at High Point University, his alma mater.
Ah, well.
There we go. He's kind of taken a very like Jim Calhoun approach to the end of his career. Just like gradually going down and down. I think Calhoun's coaching like a D3 team right now. I had no comment on that. So we were talking yesterday just for fun. Obviously, there's been a lot of Wade versus Pierce debates. That's not even a debate to me. I think it's kind of
who's
silly.
Who's debating that?
I guess I keep forgetting you're like out of the NBA news cycle now that baseball started. Paul Pierce started this himself. He said on national TV that he's better than Dwayne Wade. Okay. That's what kicked off this whole thing. And I don't know if you saw the clip from last night in Brooklyn, is, you know, where Wade had his final game. The crowd was chanting, "Paul Pierce sucks." Paul Pierce did play for the Nets multiple years. So that in and of itself is not a debate. But we were talking Wade versus Harden. Wade versus Kobe is probably a much closer debate than Wade versus Pierce. And the one that I thought was even more interesting that you brought up, because he's a little bit more of a contemporary with Wade than Harden is Chris Paul. So if you just had to say straight up, you know, even without diving into the numbers first, like who is your, you know, if someone said who had the better career, Chris Paul or Dwayne Wade, who would be your first answer without thinking too closely about it?
I think I would say Wade.
I think I said CP yesterday, but then when you start to consider the postseason stuff, it's hard to overlook three titles. It's hard to overlook getting to the finals five times, six times.
It's just, you know, you could win. I mean, we obviously saw it. You could win a NBA Finals with Dwayne Wade, peak Dwayne Wade as your best player. I don't think there was ever a point where you could have won an NBA Finals with peak Chris Paul as your best player. And I think it's maybe sort of more to do with their just style of play, where CP is just such a kind of classic point guard that that just almost never happens where that's the best player.
That's what I'm trying to look up now. Like, who's the last team to be led by a classic? Like, does Curry count?
I don't think so. Like, that, not for, like, the point of this discussion. Like, you know, I mean, Curry was the best scorer in the league.
You're talking like a quote-unquote pure classic type of point guard. Like
a pass-first point guard.
Right. I mean, Isaiah, do you have to go all the way back there? Probably.
Sure. Or, yeah, like Magic Johnson. I mean,
and you can basically cross off the entire 90s.
Right. I think that Chris Paul's just had some bad playoff moments. Those Clippers teams had some bad luck too.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would go Wade, but I think it's really close and I wouldn't argue too hard one way or the other.
I almost feel like those Clippers teams came along just a little too late. Like if you could put that Clippers team back in like 08 when Paul was at his absolute peak. I mean, he was an MVP candidate. I think he finished third one of those years behind like LeBron and Dwight.
He was kind of at his apex, if I remember correctly, sort of right around the time of that Lakers trade getting like nixed. So if he is able to link up with Blake and DeAndre all their primes like intersected, then sure, that team could have done more.
Well, it's that, and I mean, you look at the teams that won titles in the late 2000s around that range. You know, you still had Duncan Spurs in 07, you know, they're not beating them, but like that Clippers team transported back into 2009 against like that Lakers team, you know, the Powell Kobe team. That's at least a fight, or even on paper, that Mavs team that beat the Heat. It just felt like by the time the Clippers had kind of reached their peak and known their identity, the Warriors were already there. Mm-hmm. The Heat had become a bigger force. And then all of a sudden by, 2015, 2016, it kind of seemed like the Clippers had missed their opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good debate. Interested to see I haven't done a deep dive on it, but I'm sure there would be, they're both easy top, what, like 35 players of all time, 30 players of all time?
I tend to give more weight to like more recent guys.
Yeah, me too.
And not because I don't care about Dolph Schayes, but it's just like I just don't know. Like I don't know anything about these guys. So like if for me you're just starting it at like 1970, for sure, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they're easily top 30, which seems like a lot of guys, but you know, you start naming names, you can get to 10 and 15 pretty quick with guys who are, you know, definitely better than Chris Paul or Dwayne Wade. But to me, like, they're within like five spots of each other either way.
Is it controversial to say that Dirk was better than Wade, or is that widely accepted?
That's a good question. I would say that if you polled 100 people, it would be slightly in favor of Wade. I feel like he's been a little more relevant for longer, maybe had a higher peak defensively. Obviously there's a huge mm-hmm. advantage. That's a good one though. I think him and Dirk could kind of go back and forth. I mean, obviously Dirk had the win over Dwayne in 2011.
Well, I think
Wade beat him in 06.
I mean, that 06 finals was a joke. Like I think that should have been a Mavs win. And if you want to use that as the case, as part of the case for Wade, then I mean, you can. I wouldn't use it because I don't think they were the best team in that finals or deserved to win that finals. So like, that's complicated. And then, you know, Dirk's like 10-year offensive peak is just so much better from an efficiency standpoint than what you would have gotten from like Wade's 10 best offensive seasons. So kind of just depends how much you want to factor in Wade's defense. And then you sort of get into the issue too of like, you know, if Dwayne Wade had come along like 10 years later, his game would not have been great in like these past 5 years of the NBA. Like he just would not have been that great of a fit. So
I think you can make the opposite case for Dirk,
right?
Too. I think if he peaked in 2012 instead of 2005.
Yeah, I think if they both started their careers in 2010, I don't even know if Wade goes down as a Hall of Famer. Like, is that crazy? Like, how does a shooting guard who shoots 30% from three, like, how does that guy survive in today's NBA?
Talk to Russell Westbrook, man. I don't know. I think he becomes that more of that type of player that we're like, there was a period where Dwayne Wade was like inarguably a top five player for a few years.
Right.
I don't know if you could get to that level shooting 30% from three and really never improving on that. Like there was never even one season where he shot close to 40. Like Westbrook at least has had these like drastic ups and downs where there are certain years where you could make a case that he was a top four or five player. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, looking at Dirk's kind of to this point, Dirk's 6 year peak from start of the 2004-05 season to the end of 2009-10, 25.3 points per game, 8.7 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 block, 48% from the field, 39% from 3 on 2.5 3-point attempts a game.
Yeah.
That number is probably tripled at least if he's playing 10 years later.
Yeah, I mean, that's like fewer threes than Brooke Lopez took this year.
Oh, way fewer.
So like
2.5 a game?
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
That's like as many threes as Tony Snell took this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of players that like fit better today or would have fit better a while ago. But yeah, I think Dirk, just the fact that he was able to have as much success as he did in an era where a lot of his prime was like in an era that didn't really suit his game is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, going the players that he went up against too. I mean, he came along in the peak power forward, like having to defend guys who were just completely different
and
type of players
just
than him.
Studs defending him like almost every night, you know.
No, exactly. Do you have any parting thoughts on the Magic situation? I'm really glad I forced you to watch that video yesterday because I've never seen anything like that. I mean, I think most of what needs to be said about it has already been said.
Yeah, I just hope that it's properly remembered as the disaster that it was, and that we don't like sort of give him. I mean, it was just, he couldn't have handled it any worse. He couldn't have. I mean, he basically just admitted to not even trying to do what most people would consider like a competent GM's job. Like he just wasn't really into it at all. And
what if another GM that wasn't named Magic Johnson came out and said this? A faceless GM
Like Donnie Nelson, like, comes out and, like, he's just like, I'm stepping down. Like, I missed being able to tweet my buddies from college. It sucks. Like,
right. Like, we've been trying to plan our future for the last couple of months. I've just been totally checked out.
I keep getting invited on these, like, golf trips, and I just keep having to say, no, it just wasn't. It was enough, you know.
Yeah. That's literally what happened. And then to go and, like, laugh about the fact that like he was almost kind of delirious, like, I haven't even told my boss yet, this is crazy. There's been no statements. The Lakers had their exit interviews yesterday. Nobody from the front office talked. I mean, this is, even by the last 10 years of Lakers standards, like, this is as low as it gets.
I mean, is this a up there with, like, the worst GM tenures of all time? Like, is it?
Oh, yeah.
It's probably not as bad as the Isaiah Thomas New York thing.
There was so much, like, off-court stuff, too, that made that,
yeah,
like, just gross.
You have to factor all that in, like, with that.
I don't know if we'll ever top
that. Is it on par with, like, Phil Jackson?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it
I feel
worse?
Like, Phil got a worse rap, though.
I think Phil's sort of, his sort of curmudgeon-y, like, style with the media, like, just did not work well. Like, the media did not have his back at all, whereas, like, the media's until recently just really kind of had Magic's back from day one. And
Well, there was also film of Phil Jackson, like, asleep at games. I remember we saw him at the combine a couple years ago, and he just sat in the back and did not move once the entire day. Like, I think there was a worse visual for Phil.
Who do you think scouted more amateur players, like, who logged more, like, hours of scouting per year out of Magic and Phil?
I think Magic, but I think he went to a lot of games but didn't scout like he thought.
I think he, like, went to games still as Magic and would like glad hand people.
Well, I think he just went,
like,
as a fan.
Exactly.
he watched, you know, he would watch De'Aaron Fox play in the tournament the same way a fan would, and be like, that guy's really good, and not really picking him apart the way.
He'd, like, wear, like, an MSU t-shirt.
That would be a fascinating documentary. Yeah, right. To watch Magic sit with an actual tenured NBA scout and, like, just the differences in how they view players. Although, apparently, it's on the record now that Magic wanted De'Aaron Fox instead of Lonzo and was talked out of it. So maybe, like, that's maybe what puts him ahead of Phil.
Who talked him out of it?
The other Pelinka / Lakers, whoever else has a voice. I don't know. Jeannie Buss.
Yeah,
it was in one of those, like, tell-all pieces that came out this week.
Yeah.
I think it was in the Bill Orem one.
I mean, the Lonzo Ball pick was – I didn't think it was good at the time. And, like, it just – everyone just – nobody, like, talked bad about it because everyone just assumed, oh, Lonzo to Lakers. Like, duh, that's a match, like, because he grew up there. Like, so they have to draft him. But, like,
They had D'Angelo Russell on the roster at the time.
Granted, if it had been me, I would have taken Josh Jackson. So that would have been even worse. But, like – it was a bad pick. It's not like they've been, like, hitting on all these picks and they just haven't worked out. Like, you could still look back on it and say, like, well, there were three or four guys that went within four picks of them that were all bad.
Right. It'd be great if Magic was on the roster as, like, really wanting Josh Jackson, and then he got talked out of it to take Paul.
Do you think Magic knows who Josh Jackson is?
I think he does because Josh Jackson's from Michigan and was supposed to go to Michigan State.
Okay.
And then he didn't. So he probably knew of him from high school.
Okay.
Actually, we should look back. There's probably tweets to him.
Well, that's the best thing about this is that Magic's Twitter account can now just return to normal.
Well, I'll finally be getting Dodger scores again. Right. Yeah, I used to never; it was just impossible to find how the Dodgers were doing.
Recaps of Dodger wins.
No, it was like having a real life Pert Hapley on Twitter, but if Pert Hapley only tweeted about basic sports knowledge, so yeah, I mean, it'll be good to have him back. I don't think he's tweeted yet, has he? Like, his first tweet back better be good. Like, people are going to go nuts, whatever it is. Like, I hope he just picks up where he left off.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, he tweeted about a WNBA player last night. But that still would be within his realm because the Lakers own the Sparks. So he hasn't really returned. Okay, let's go series by series. Talk about the playoffs. Real quickly, I did a final check on our over-unders. Not good. You finished 14-16. I finished 13-17.
Oof.
I feel like when we reviewed these a month ago, we were on course to do a lot better. There were some bad ones. Me taking the over on the Suns and the Bulls in particular. But
I think the moral of the story is that you're gonna do better if you just take the under on all the teams that could feasibly start tanking because they just tank so hard. Like, over the final month or so, the only team that would have really burned you would have been the Hawks and the Kings, but if you went just under on all of like the 10 worst teams, you probably hit on the other eight.
Right. Yeah, we'll be back next year. I feel like I can top 13 correct guesses. Looking back, I don't know what I was thinking on a lot of these. I need to go back and re-listen to the audio. But which series do you want to start with to break down?
Let's just start with the worst one, Bucks Pistons.
All right. Bucks Pistons is the third game on Sunday, 6 o'clock start. Do you watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
How's that going to work? I don't do that.
Well, I'm not. I hadn't planned on watching much of this series at all. So
nothing changes.
Yeah, nothing, I'm just going to watch Game of Thrones.
Okay, sounds good. That's exactly what Shannon said too. Even though his team is in this, like you said, this one to me is the most boring. Even though in Wisconsin, you know, there's a lot of excitement about this Bucks team. They are really fun to watch. But to me, like, there is not a team that's less fun to watch in this playoffs than the Pistons.
That's accurate. So you just have a team that's way better than the most boring team. So like it couldn't be a less entertaining series to me, because it's just like, it'll be weird if there's a game where the Bucks don't win by double digits. Yeah. And if that happens, they probably played really ugly
right. In
the first place. So I'm waiting for the second round.
I'm just not inspired by this Detroit team. I know a few years ago, and this was pre-Blake, I thought they gave the Cavs actually a pretty good run. And I think it was 2016 or 2017, one of the years where they just like swept through the East, and you know, they kind of mucked it up and at least kept it close. But I really don't see that happening. I mean, Blake sat out the game that they needed to win to get into the playoffs last night. To me, that says that his knee is nowhere near 100%. And you know, having Thursday, Friday, Saturday off helps, I guess, getting that extra day. But even if he plays, you know, I just can't imagine he's going to be 100% or able to play in, you know, four games in 7 nights.
I was really surprised that you wrote here in the notes that 5 games is the best odds.
Yeah, like, I went through, and this is coming from the FanDuel Sportsbook.
I don't know how 4 games. I don't know.
That's what I thought.
Like, what would have to happen for the Bucks not to win all four of these games?
I don't know.
Like,
I mean,
Giannis gets hurt. Like, I don't know
that's
how
not
else they don't sweep, like, the Pistons
right.
in this.
No, the Bucks aren't a team to me that, you know, like Denver, for example, which we'll talk about in a little bit, like they have like dramatic home road splits mm-hmm. where you could see no matter what, you're like, well, maybe they just won't show up for a game. Like the Bucks have not no-showed a game really at all this year when they've been healthy. And even games like the other night against OKC when Giannis is out, Bledsoe's out, Brogdon, Mirotic, you know, they still at least put up a fight. And I'm not saying Pat Connaughton is going to give you 35 good minutes in a playoff game, but they're deep. You know, even if Giannis were to get in foul trouble, I wouldn't worry a ton about that. I don't know. There's just not anything to get excited about. I guess you have Thon Maker return storylines. He probably is going to end up guarding Giannis a bunch. I looked on NBA.com stats, had Blake as by far the primary defender on Giannis during the regular season. Bucks swept the Pistons in the regular season. 3 of those 4 were huge blowouts. The other one was a game where Stanley Johnson had like literally his best game ever. The Pistons hit 16 threes. But Blake actually did okay on Giannis, drew 3 offensive fouls in 4 games, forced 8 turnovers on 135 possessions, which by Giannis standards is, you know, pretty decent. With him out, you know, or limited, I mean, Thon obviously has no chance on Giannis. And then you're looking at John Luer as the next option. Like Detroit is just, I don't know. I'm with you. I don't see how this goes more than 4 games.
Yeah, so
let's just move on.
That's, please.
well, to a much better series, Toronto and Orlando.
I think there's going to be 3 sweeps in the first round. This yep. is another one. You know, the Magic are at least more interesting to watch than the Pistons, but
better uniforms.
This isn't going to be competitive at all.
This one too, though. Again, our friends at the FanDuel Sportsbook. The favorite is 5 games, and it's by actually a pretty significant margin. It's +168 to finish in 5 games and +300 to finish in 6 games, +330 to finish in 4 games.
Huh.
So there's a better chance, according to FanDuel, that it finishes in 6 than 4. I completely disagree with that.
I feel like there's money to be made on betting some of these sweeps.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same conversation that we just had about Milwaukee you could basically have about Toronto, right? There's just, they're consistent. They're not a team that loafs it on the road. You know,
you're like, think about the amount of games this year where the Raptors either sat one of Kawhi or Lowry. And that's not going to happen in any of these games.
I mean, probably without looking, I would probably about around half, if not more.
So you've been the Raptors, more than any of the teams in the Eastern Conference, have just been going through this regular season specifically with the playoffs in mind. Like, that's all they've really cared about. So now that there's no restrictions on Kawhi, I just think it's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, I think they're a team that kind of continued to ascend over the last month. And like you said, we've never really seen them over the course of more than four or five games at a time with Kawhi. And obviously when you're playing the same team, I think you get a better sample of that. Yeah, I think that's crazy. Five games, maybe, you know, whatever. Maybe,
I mean, Marc Gasol is about as good of an option to put on Vucevic as you could ask. So
Orlando just has no depth either. I mean, their backup point guard is Michael Carter-Williams. I think that's all you really need to say. Right. Philadelphia, Brooklyn. We'll knock out the East first before we move to the West. This one, to me, all comes down to Embiid. I think Philly wins no matter what. If Embiid is fully healthy, 4 or 5. If Embiid is limited or misses a game or two, that opens things up a little bit. But like Brooklyn, to me, like, you know, I like Jared Allen as a young player, but they have no answers whatsoever on either end, really, for Embiid.
Yeah, I think this is going to be 5 games to Philly, where I think the Nets are just good enough and Philly is susceptible enough for the Nets to probably steal one of these just with a hot shooting night. But yeah, it's not going to be overly competitive.
Yeah, I'd be pretty surprised if it's not 2-0 going back to Brooklyn. Right. Yeah, maybe Brooklyn wins 3 or 4. But yeah, fun Nets team, but I don't think Philly is as good of a mess. A lot of people seem to think this is, like, you know, one of the more intriguing series to me, which maybe, like, relative to the rest of them,
I think people are trying too hard to, like, come up with ways to paint these as interesting series. Like, there's nothing wrong with just saying this Eastern Conference playoffs is a joke in round one.
Would Brooklyn-Boston be intriguing to you at all?
No.
That was another one where people thought, like, that. I feel like if that was a matchup, that would be a very trendy upset pick. I'm just not that high on Brooklyn.
No. I don't get why people, like, there's one thing to just be like, oh, this Brooklyn team, they're kind of on the rise. They're pretty fun. They're better than you think they are.
Right.
And it's another to say, yeah, this team's going to beat this Celtics team that almost got to the NBA Finals last year.
All right, speaking of the Celtics, they're the 4, Indiana's the 5. This matchup has kind of been, you know, on a collision course for basically the last 2 months. Indiana has been pretty horrific over the last month. At one point, they lost 10 straight road games. Obviously, they'll be starting the series in Boston. Al Horford's been a little bit banged up. Marcus Smart, you know, probably the biggest storyline heading into this is he's for sure out round one, and it sounds like, you know, almost for sure round two and maybe even longer after that, judging by the way that Brad Stevens talked about that this morning. Obviously a pretty big loss. I think that's, to me, a much bigger loss when they play the Bucks in round two than it would be against Indiana. And even though Indiana's been able to hang on, you know, without Oladipo, I think this is probably Boston in 5.
Yeah. Maybe the Pacers could get one at home. But I think a sweep is on the table too. Yeah. The Smart injury just really sucks. Like, I'm gonna be pulling for the Bucks, so it's, you know, it's good for the Bucks that they're gonna be without him. But I just think it really reduces the Celtics' ceiling to really make a run and kind of keep each round of this Eastern Conference playoffs competitive. It's a tough break for them. I mean, he's their heart and soul. He's, like, the most frustrating guy to play against on that team, and especially in the postseason atmosphere. So that's a big bummer.
So we're in agreement. All 4 top seeds advance pretty easily. Mm. Yeah, I'd be surprised if anything goes to 7. All right, we'll start at the top in the West. Golden State, the 1. The Los Angeles Clippers are the 8. I asked Shannon McCune, who does the Friday podcast, just a couple hours ago, I asked him, if you took away Kevin Durant from the Warriors, would they still be the favorite to you in the West? He just disappears. He doesn't go anywhere else.
I think so. Yeah. It's probably got more to do with, like, I would not have said yes last year.
Okay.
I just don't think, whoever you want to say the second best team in the West is, I don't think that team is good enough. Like, it's more to do with the second best team slash third best team than it is to do with anything with the Warriors without KD.
I agree. I don't think Houston is...
I don't think they would be the favorites in the NBA Finals without KD, for what it's worth. Like, I think the Bucks and the Raptors are better than the second-best team in the West.
I think it'd still be really close. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be up in arms if the Bucks were a slight favorite and they got there. But, again, I mean, this just speaks to how crazy talented this team is. I think Houston's slightly worse than last year, but not all that much worse. Do you have something to say about the Warriors?
No. No, just checking my Slack.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want to make storylines about the series, Patrick Beverley has at least a reputation that he can give guards trouble. I'm not going to buy into that. The Warriors starting five has been the best defensive five in the league since the All-Star break, even though Cousins has had, you know, some issues here and there.
You agree that this is a sweep?
Oh, yeah. Okay. No question. The Warriors the last 2 years have dropped either game three or four in the first round. One year, I think, was against the Spurs. And I don't even remember who the other was. So, like, there is a history here of them kind of, you know, taking their foot off the pedal in game three or four. But even if that happens, I mean, this is a Clippers team that really didn't even care if it made the playoffs like 3 months ago when they traded Tobias Harris. Like, they were just completely indifferent as to what happened after that. And obviously they deserve a lot of credit for getting here, but even as an 8 seed, like, they're just, to me, they're even weaker than a lot of these first round opponents that Golden State's had during this run.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, like, last year's Pelicans team was just so much more dangerous.
Right. They took a game off them. Right. If and when the Warriors win another title, and if KD gets a third straight finals MVP, is this the summer, you know, where we, you know, around mid-July, we finally say, you know, he's taking the proverbial best player in the world title away from LeBron?
Does LeBron even have that title?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
That's been decided by me.
Okay.
But I think his grip on it is looser than ever, due in part to what happened with him this season and just other players, you know, whether it's Durant or Harden or Giannis or even Curry, you know, kind of continuing to ascend.
Yeah, so I think that it's tough for me to... I mean, KD might be the best player in the world. It's just such a weird conversation to have when he probably isn't even going to make first team All NBA. Like, I think Giannis is going to, you know, short of them really kind of flaming out, I think Giannis has a chance to take that title. Yeah. I just don't really see KD doing it because I don't know what would have to happen. Like, he's not going to have that matchup with LeBron where he can, like, be better than LeBron in a finals matchup. Like, maybe if they play the Bucks and he just completely destroys Giannis or something, then he takes that title. But I kind of think either Giannis takes it or we kind of go into the offseason with not really a clear guy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I do think even though the Cavs got swept out of the finals last year, it was still LeBron just because of how he played. You know, he had that ridiculous run up to the finals with, you know, huge games, buzzer beaters, you know, the 50-point game one. Like, even though they lost again in the finals, it didn't feel like it was on him. I think, if anything, JR kind of took most of the heat. But this year, I don't think that's the story whatsoever. I mean, I think the heat is on LeBron more than it's ever been, probably since 2011. But I also don't know that Durant on this roster is even capable. Like, there's always going to be people, I myself would never do this, who will say, you know, when you're playing with Curry and Cousins and Clay and Durant and Draymond, you know, you just, you know, kind of like the same reason that he hasn't won MVP since he's gone there, even though he's partially deserved it. There's just kind of this built-in difference, you know, when you play with that roster. So we'll see. All right, the 2-7 in the West, 2-seed Denver, 7-seed San Antonio. Denver got a win last night, not exactly the most encouraging win against, like, the C-squad for Minnesota, a game that looked like actually Denver was going to lose up until the last couple of minutes, but they end up winning that, and everything kind of came together for them in terms of how they wanted to finish the season, you know, with the Western Conference bracket shaking out. So they find themselves in the 2 spot despite a pretty uninspiring run since the All-Star break. And what that means now, if you look at the bracket, one of Denver, San Antonio, Portland, or Oklahoma City is going to be playing to go to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, and Denver did their part to kind of maneuver this side of the bracket, and it really couldn't have worked out any better for them. Yeah. I think that they would have been, I mean, I So just from your point of view, who on the other side of the bracket? I mean, I think you would pick Denver to beat the Clippers. Would you pick the other three teams to all beat Denver? Utah, Houston, and Golden State?
Right now, I might. You know, if you asked me this a month and a half ago, no. You know, Denver was kind of a team that I compared to the Bucks for a lot of the season, you know, where they, you know, Denver got off at this hot start. They were at times, you know, building a fairly comfortable lead over Golden State. And unlike Milwaukee, you know, everything just kind of fell apart for Denver. And it's, you know, it hasn't been a disaster. They're still the two seed. They're still in a pretty good spot here, like we just said. But I don't feel as strongly about them right now as I did, you know, not that long ago. We were talking about Jokic as maybe the guy who might sneak his way into the MVP race. You know, that's kind of over. Will Barton's taken a step back. Gary Harris has been, you know, he's been hurt, but he hasn't really progressed. Jamal Murray's been up and down. Like, they just, you know, while the Bucks have basically gone wire to wire, game one to game 82, being the best team in the league in almost every facet with very few blips, it seems like Denver maybe peaked a little too early. And they, to me, you know, are the one team that you maybe look at in the West as, yeah, they're the nominal two seed. Yes, their record says they're the second best team in the West, but, you know, as you just alluded to, you know, I would take Houston over them. You know, OKC could certainly beat them in a series on the right day. I don't know if that's a guarantee. I think a lot of people would pick Utah over them. And even, you know, San Antonio, who they're facing in round one. I don't think this is a cakewalk whatsoever. And I have a feeling that you're going to pick San Antonio to win the series.
No.
Okay. I'm trying to set you up.
Well, so I think that this is just a worst case matchup for the Spurs. I mean, worse would be if they matched up with the Warriors, but... Yeah. I really think this Spurs team could give a team like the Thunder trouble. They would give a team like the Blazers trouble. I could see them even giving those 4-5, the Rockets, Jazz. Like, I think that they could give them trouble. I think the Nuggets are just their offense is just such a well-oiled machine. It's kind of like a better version of what the Spurs kind of do to me, and it's not the type of thing where there's this really inefficient player that they can kind of take advantage of by, you know, giving them a lot of looks. Like, I just think it's going to be, I don't know what your game plan in this. They don't have like a big guy that can get really physical with Jokic, which I think is like the recipe to give him trouble.
Ever heard of him?
I just, like, if you're going into the series and you're the Spurs, I don't even know what's your game plan. Like, yeah, you're not a better offensive team. You're probably not even a better defensive team. Like, there's not,
definitely not a better defensive team. I mean, San Antonio has had like runs where they've looked like the old Spurs defense, but I mean, Denver's a top 10 defense. That's kind of where the difference, like, has come. They're sixth in offense this year. They were sixth last year.
I honestly think I'd pick the Spurs to beat either the Thunder or the Blazers. And
is that just like a strategy? Like, you just give Pop such an edge?
Well, Portland, it's partly because of the Nurkic injury, but
right.
You know, I don't think they have necessarily more talent than the Spurs without Nurkic. And then with OKC, I think it would just be a gigantic strategy advantage to the Spurs. So it's not a good matchup for them. I think it probably goes like six. I don't think I see that seven games has the best odds.
Yeah,
I can't see the Spurs team winning three games in this series. It just doesn't have the offensive firepower. I don't think so. Yeah. And I think Denver kind of matchups pretty well. The guys that they can throw at the Spurs' best players, I think, is a pretty good setup. So I think it goes like five or six in Denver's favor.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I still think San Antonio has the edge in terms of strategy, but I mean, Denver's roster is just so much more superior. They don't really have a big, like, I know LaMarcus Aldridge can stretch, you know, almost out to 3-point range, but he's not really someone you're worried about pulling Jokic too far out. I think Jokic for the most part can stay with him. And then on the other end, I mean, you can put Aldridge on Jokic, but, you know, they're going to have Plumlee, they're going to have Millsap. Like, San Antonio just doesn't really have the manpower to pull this upset.
I think I do just want to, I've been getting kind of fired up hearing people with votes talk about their coach of the year ballots, and I don't care at all about six man, but for some reason I care a lot about coach of the year. Like, the idea that Mike Malone should be top three coach of the year candidate to me is just ludicrous, because they vastly outperformed their point differential. Like, they shouldn't have won as many games as they did win. And the, you know, I could, there's like half a dozen guys that I would have listed over Mike Malone, and yet I keep hearing him as like the second or third guy on a lot of people's ballots. So I think he's like an average NBA coach, and that's fine, but it's, I don't think he's close to Coach of the Year material personally. There, I'm off my soapbox.
Go off, man. what a rant. Yeah, I mean, he's going to finish in the top five probably, right, for Coach of the Year. It was a lot more justifiable, like I said before, it was more justifiable in January than it is now, I think. Like, sure. they had to win the West in the regular season, I think, for him to be, in my mind, a legitimate candidate. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad roster. So what is your official pick then? Denver in six?
Yep.
Okay. I think I'm with you there. I think Denver wins, but we don't come away from this series thinking any higher of Denver. You know, I think it's like an uninspiring six-game win.
I could see, like, the Spurs stealing game one and everyone being, like, kind of like, whoa, like, upset alert. And
right.
Then,
you know. But, I mean, I don't. That's the thing is, if that happens, I don't know that I trust Denver to rally and win, like, the next four. You know, yeah. I don't think that the talent discrepancy is that big, but I don't think the overall ceilings of these teams, or even, like, kind of the baseline where they usually end up, is, like, that different, where if Denver goes down 0-1, you know, they're not going to win it in five, or, you know, I think that would be a really scary thought if you're the Nuggets. Like, you know, losing game two is a little bit different, you know, because you have a little more wiggle room, but losing game one and then really feeling like you have to win game two because you're such a bad road team and San Antonio's so good at home, that to me is probably, if San Antonio's going to win it, they have to win game one.
Is there any way Jokic doesn't go off in this series?
I mean, the only thing that's really stopped him in matchups like this is just like those weird, indifferent games, you know, where he'll just take eight shots in 38 minutes. And I don't really see that happening.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't measure his effectiveness necessarily in points scored. I just think he's going to pretty much be able to do whatever he wants all series long.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Spurs kind of get the benefit of the doubt on defense, and that, you know, Derek White's been good. But really, other than that, they don't have a ton of plus defenders on this team at all. And it goes back to what we've been saying all year, which is if DeJounte Murray was running the show or just in the rotation even for this Spurs team, I think it kind of changes everything. All right, the 3 seed Portland, 6 seed OKC. I think almost by default, this is, to me, the most intriguing series of the first round. There's probably a case to be made for the last one. We'll talk about Houston and Utah. Even without Nurkic, there's a lot of star power in the series. You have the two guards in Portland. You have Russ and PG. Jake Layman, who didn't go off to the degree that I thought he would last night. Anthony Simons, who damn near went for a 40-10-10 in 48 minutes last night. I mean, a couple things to watch. Paul George didn't play yesterday against the Bucks. His shoulder's really been an issue for, you know, seems like over a month now. Steven Adams left that game. I haven't seen the video. I was just actually tuned in to Magic Hornets instead of Bucks Thunder last night. But I saw tweets that said, like, he kind of landed weirdly on his arm, and his arm was, like, convulsing. And, of course, he stayed in the game, shot the free throws after a hard foul, and then briefly exited. So something to keep an eye on there. OKC's a little bit banged up. Would you be picking Portland if Nurkic was healthy?
I would.
Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I would.
So without Nurkic...
I think it's just a toss up, really, without Nurkic. I think some people would, in a toss up, would go with the home team. I'm gonna go with the team that I think is a bit more proven in the playoffs, which is the Thunder. But I don't feel good about it at all. Like, DJ, who is a coworker and is a Thunder fan, the only Thunder fan I know, wanted to bet me on this series, and I don't feel good enough about it to take the Blazers, although I like I said, I think it's a toss-up. I think Dame Lillard could very easily be the best player in this series. I think that would probably be the odds-on favorite right now, just given Paul George's health. So I think Portland has the best player, but Russ is a tough matchup for Lillard, I think, on both sides of the ball. So it's just, you know, I think that advantage might get mitigated a little bit by that matchup. So I don't really trust a lot of the guys behind Dame. And I think that at the very least, we can probably count on the Thunder to play really good defense.
I agree with all that. I mean, you said the Thunder, you know, have a little bit more playoff success, which is true. When Kevin Durant was on the roster, that's the only thing I would push back on. Like, both of these teams are coming off of horrific playoff showings last year, where OKC won game one convincingly at home against Utah and then lost three of the next four. And Russ just completely you know, kind of lost it at the end of that series. The Paul George injury to me is big, too, because Dame Lillard, I agree with you, is the best player in the series. But if Paul George was at 100% playing like he was for most of this year, he's the best player in the series.
Maybe it's just as simple as just saying Portland's got the best player, they have the better coach, and they have home court. So why aren't we just taking the Blazers? Maybe it's that simple. I look at the rest of that roster behind Lillard, and it just doesn't seem like a team that, like, I mean, I think McCollum's kind of overrated to a certain extent, and he's been banged up, and I don't know. I think Lillard would just have to really just carry them. I think he would have to average like 40 points a game, which I think is possible, but short of that, I don't know. I think they're a little outmanned.
Yeah, I mean, I almost think that the Nurkic injury has been overstated. You know, people, like, when he first went down, it was like, well, there goes Portland season. And, I mean, Nurkic is really good, and he was having a great year. But, if there was any team out there that could somewhat weather a storm like this, it's Portland, which has, you know, Enes Kanter and Zach Collins. Like, they have other capable centers. They don't have anyone who's as good as Nurkic or was, you know, used the same way as Nurkic. But, you know, you're not throwing out Timofey Mozgov or Kem Birch all of a sudden.
I think probably where they miss him most is like in the pick and roll.
Yes.
You know, he's a really good screen setter. And just this matchup specifically,
right.
Like Steven Adams is going to just push around the rest of those centers.
So. Right. No, Nurk did a great job defending Adams. I mean, I think these teams met four times in the regular season. And I mean, like you said, I think Lillard and Russ almost cancel each other out. Like, Lillard always plays well against Westbrook. Westbrook always plays well against Lillard. And, you know, even though Russ can get a little bit out of control, like, historically, Russ has come out on top, like, wins and losses against Lillard. But I just think I'm a little bit with you at McCollum. I wouldn't say he's overrated, but I'm worried that he's played, like, 1.5 games going into the series, and they need him big time. You know, I started looking to, you know, the advanced defensive numbers a little bit earlier, and, like, Aminu and Harkless did a good job bothering Paul George earlier this year. I mean, I think to me that's just going to be the key. Is if Paul George is 85% healthy or better, OKC probably wins. If Paul George struggles and can't shoot like he has been, you know, in February and March, you know, then I think Portland probably wins it in 6 or 7.
You're kind of talking me into Portland a little bit, because I don't think Paul George is going to be at 90% health.
OKC is under 500 since the break, and they won their last 5 games, 4 of which were complete cupcakes. So, like, without that, I mean, there's just not a lot of evidence that they're playing well.
Should I hit DJ up right now and say I'll take that bet?
Wait, what was the bet again?
I mean, 20, 50 bucks, whatever, something like that.
Just on series winner?
Yep.
Okay.
I think it's worth a shot. I mean...
You've historically fared well in these bets.
I'm gonna really be rooting for the Blazers, no matter what, just because I like Lillard so much, and I mean, it would be Layman. It'd probably be more fun, yeah, right, yeah, the Lillard and Layman show,
Leonard. I didn't even name Myers Leonard when I was going through their center depth. That's how deep they are. It's like you forget how great their fourth center is. Okay, let's finish up Houston and Utah. It almost seems like right away, you know, when the schedule came out, or when the standings were finalized last night, there wasn't a lot of talk about this series. It was Golden State Houston round two. You know, wow, we're getting this round two, not in the conference finals. I mean, I don't think Houston's going to breeze through this by any means. I think the Rockets win. FanDuel has 7 games as the most likely scenario. I think Houston can probably do it in 5 or 6, but it wouldn't surprise me if it goes a distance.
What would surprise you more, 5 games or 7 games?
I think 5.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, Utah's good. I don't know. I mean,
I think it's going to go 6 or 7, personally. I don't want to count out the Jazz, just because I think that they have a really high ceiling especially if Ricky Rubio's making shots and Donovan Mitchell's making shots, like I think they can win this series. But I mean, it's a lot to bet against this Rockets team in round one. I think that they are going to feel like they have a lot to prove in this series. They still have, I mean, I'd take their 3 over Utah's best 3 by a pretty wide margin.
Yeah, I mean, Rubio's banged up too. I think that's the bigger thing. The feeling is that he's going to play, but I don't know where he'll be at. And I mean, he got hurt. I don't think they had him in the playoffs at all last year. Mitchell got hurt in the playoffs. Like, I do think Houston's ceiling is higher for sure. If both teams are playing their best, if Houston, you know, comes out and just goes guns blazing, they're going to win this in five. But the way that they play, as we saw last year, you know, they are vulnerable to lose to anyone on any night when you bomb that many threes.
I think the Blazers-Thunder matchup is the most likely upset on the board, but I think the Rockets-Jazz matchup is maybe the has the highest ceiling as a first-round series. Like, I think it could be
just in terms
like
of fun.
A classic series. Yeah, yeah. Where yeah. it's like, I think that Portland-Thunder series is going to be kind of ugly at times, and it's just the most evenly matched of the mm-hmm. two, but like we're talking about with the Jazz and the Rockets, I would argue probably two of the top, I don't know, six teams in the league, seven teams in the league, something like that.
Yeah,
that,
it depends how much you value those top four in the East.
That makes it a pretty – well, I think these are two of the three best teams in the West. So even if you take the four in the East, I think you're still talking about two.
You think Utah's better than Denver?
Yeah, I do right now. Just based on
– right this moment, yeah, probably.
Yeah, and I think they're more equipped to win. I think they would – they're just a better playoff mm-hmm. team than Denver is going to be. But yeah, I mean, this is if I had to watch, like, if you told me I could only watch one series, I'd probably pick this one, even though I think the Blazers-Thunder one is more likely to have the underdog win.
Okay, a couple more quick things, and we'll wrap up. So the title odds right now, unsurprisingly, Golden State, the heavy favorite at minus 225, Milwaukee plus 650, Toronto plus 950, Houston plus 1100, Boston and Philly both at plus 600, Denver at, or excuse me, 1600. Denver at plus 1,800 and OKC at plus 3,500. I'm of the belief that Golden State is going to walk to another title, so I'm staying away from any of this. But, you know, just from a betting value perspective, do any of these title odds, you know, intrigue you even a little bit?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to walk to a title. I think I was the only person on staff that, like, 2 months ago or whatever said that I would take the field over the Warriors. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of waxed and waned on that opinion. I think it's... To me, I think right this minute, it's like 50-50 Warriors versus the field, which I know is much closer than you would have it. But I think the Raptors at plus 950 is really appealing. I think mm-hmm. that they are – I think that I'm probably behind the Warriors. I'm probably most confident in that team firing on all cylinders all playoffs long. Like, mm-hmm. I think that they're just built – I mean, I don't know if you could have a team built better to match up with the Warriors in the finals when you can have that Lowry, Green, Siakam, Kawhi, like, defensive. I mean, those guys can switch probably across the board on the Warriors, and they have the ability to give them a little bit of trouble with those bigger lineups too. So I think that, you know, if that was the finals, I think I would – have the Warriors winning in like six games. So if that's mm-hmm. how close I think the finals would be, I think plus 950 is pretty decent. And then I see a little bit of value in the Bucks plus 650, and I think the Celtics plus 1600 is interesting too. Those are the only three other than the Warriors mm-hmm. that I would consider, just because I think the ceilings of those three teams are high enough that they could beat Golden State. But I think the Raptors one's my favorite.
I guess what would happen hypothetically, let's say Curry goes down, Golden State loses in round two to Houston. All of a sudden, the West is wide open. I mean, Houston, would you agree that had Houston pulled the upset last year in the Western Conference Finals, that they would have gone on to beat Cleveland? I really wish we could have seen that series, by the way.
I think they would have. I don't know. I mean,
LeBron would have gone nuts, but I still don't know if it would have been enough. Like, that Houston team was really, really good. And that Cavs team was really bad.
That LeBron's game one is still just kind of stuck in my head, and it's, I mean, he had that game, but at like no point during that game were you like, oh, this will be a series. You just really know this is a crazy game.
It was like LeBron had literally the best individual finals game ever, and they still lost.
I think I would actually take the Cavs, because I think it would have been such a emotional like letdown the Rockets. I think it would just been so spent, like, in every sense.
I also think it would have rejuvenated series. The Cavs too. Like, I think the Cavs went into that series, you know, LeBron I'm sure would never admit it, but they went in knowing what was going to happen,
right? And I think LeBron would have just been sniffing another title and would have just done everything in his power, like, every 48 minutes of every game to make it happen. Yep. So I think I actually would have gone with the Cavs. But I think, I mean, it shouldn't be lost on people just how close the Warriors came to losing last year before even getting to the finals. Mm-hmm. And then you have three teams in the East, or at least two teams in the East, that I think are better than any team in the East last year. So,
well, that's going back to my original question, is let's say Golden State goes down, like, then who is the favorite at that point? Does it shift to Milwaukee? Do you still kind of lean Toronto a little bit? Or is it a team in the West? Like, if Houston beats Golden State, do they become all of a sudden the team that could, you know, I guess as someone who's watched the Bucks a lot this year, I would feel pretty good about the Bucks' chances to beat Houston.
Yeah.
But I don't feel good about the Bucks' chances to beat Golden State, which transitive property doesn't really add up, you know?
I think if the Warriors got bounced, I think the Raptors would be my personal favorite. Mm-hmm. Just because I think they are the best position to come out of the East. I think if the Malcolm Brogdon injury doesn't happen, I might go Bucks. I think that's...
I really think he'll be back for round two, but we'll
see.
Okay. They, at least, unless they're just putting up this big smokescreen, like, they've been really optimistic publicly about that, but we'll see. Yeah, I mean, it's a concerning injury, to say the least. Okay, last thing. And I haven't read your responses yet. I kind of asked a similar question in our roundtable that'll go up on the site shortly. I just wanted to talk about, like, the players that have kind of reputational stakes in these playoffs. I don't know that it's necessarily make or break for anyone. Although Harden, to some degree, is kind of getting there. You know, as we talked earlier, you know, with him, where he kind of stacks up historically, you know, still being in the middle of his prime, but really not having any playoff success whatsoever. And I think if anything, you know, you kind of think the opposite when you think of Harden in the playoffs. But I just listed Harden, Westbrook, Giannis, Vucevic, D'Angelo Russell, Kyrie, and Lillard were the guys who came to mind who you could kind of frame the storyline of, you know, for someone like Vucevic and D'Angelo Russell, you know, it's really solidifying yourself, you know, as a star in the league. And obviously I don't expect Orlando to beat Toronto, and I don't really expect the Nets to beat Philly, but you know, how those guys play, I think, kind of shapes how we view them going into next season. You know, and then I think there's opportunities for guys like Harden and Giannis to kind of grab that, or at least make a really compelling case for that best player in the world title that, you know, could be very much up for grabs this summer. So do you agree, disagree with any of those guys? Anyone else you'd add to that list?
So I interpreted that question as a kind of in the first round.
Sure.
Not the entire
for the round table. Yeah.
I didn't really consider players on teams like the Nets or the Magic. Just, I don't think players on teams that bad don't usually leave a lasting impression no matter what they do. So I think James Harden is atop the list. The fact that that's not a slam dunk win for the Rockets means that they could lose, obviously. And if the Rockets got bounced in the first round, I think that looks pretty bad. Russell Westbrook was my number two guy. I think with the Paul George injury, he's going to have – I think that Thunder pretty much ride or die with Westbrook in round one. And if they – you know, if he shoots like 35% for the series and they lose, then that's not a good look. And if he just carries his team on his back and they win that series, then, you know, all the Westbrook stands will be rejoicing. Dame Lillard, kind of the exact same thing. Like, he could carry his team to a round one win, and that would look great. If they lose, I'm sure he'll shoulder a decent amount of the blame.
Well, especially after getting swept last year.
Right. And then Nikola Jokic is my fourth one, just because I think he's still a little underrated in some circles, but there's also these widespread questions about how he'll fare in the postseason. So.
Yeah, well, he's never even played a playoff game before.
Right, and like I think there's a lot of pessimism about how his game will translate into the postseason. So if he just doesn't really – like I could see – you know, there's a scenario where he just isn't really impacting these games to the extent that we think he should, and then all of a sudden maybe the Nuggets get pushed in that series or even lose that series, and I think he's got a lot riding on this. And if he – is just by far the best player in that series, and I think that would go a long way for him as well.
No, Jokic is a good one. I should have put him on my list. I think in terms of just pure reputation around the league, like, he probably has the most to gain or lose. Like, it felt like this year he jumped into, you know, if you're going to make a list of the 10 best players in the league, Nikola Jokic has to be on it. if they get bounced in six games in round one as a two seed, I think he might back his way out of that list.
Right.
If he dominates and they make a run to the conference finals and, you know, he's borderline averaging a triple-double through the playoffs, all of a sudden he goes into next year in that conversation closer to the top five than he is the top 10 or 15.
I think just from the scope of the entire playoffs and not just the first round, I think Giannis is probably at or near the top just because he could establish himself as the best player in the league, or they could get bounced by Boston in the second round. I think that that's completely in play. And if they got bounced, I think a large part of why they would get bounced is because the Celtics would just be forcing him to take threes. And, you know, he's been hitting mm-hmm. these threes down the stretch in games that don't really matter. But, you know, what if he starts the first two games like 1-for-10 on three-pointers? Like, does he just stop taking them in game three?
I don't even know if it's about like the makes versus the attempts. I think it's about the like aesthetics of it. You know, if they're down 10 in the third quarter and Al Horford is playing him 12 feet off and Giannis is still hesitating and mm-hmm. kind of, you know, plodding around, you know, with nobody there. Like, I mean, we've seen it when they played the Sixers last week. Embiid was kind of doing that, and obviously the stakes weren't as high, and you know, it's whatever. But you could, like, Embiid missed his first couple threes, and after that, did not want to take one the rest of the game, and it impacted how they played offense. And I think, to it, like, Giannis is kind of in the same category as Jokic in that way, where neither of them have had playoff success. You know, one of them hasn't been there, the other hasn't won a series. I do feel like Giannis is like, legacy, for lack of a better term, is already more cemented, though. Like, they're going to win round one. If they lose to Boston, I don't think people are going to all of a sudden turn on Giannis. I think it'll become a story.
I think he can leave these playoffs as the consensus best player in the world, and I think he can leave these playoffs with a consensus that he's not yet the best player in the world. Like, if they get bounced early, like round two, or if they get bounced in like a non-competitive Eastern Conference Finals, mm-hmm. then I just don't think anyone's going to be like Giannis. Yeah. Like, they're not. Like, it'll be Durant, Curry, LeBron, like maybe Harden. Like, people aren't going to bring up Giannis when they talk about the best player in the world in the offseason.
Well, I think people will, but then there's this trump card hanging over him of, okay, well, that guy just lost in five in the East Finals to mm-hmm. Toronto and got his lunch eaten by Kawhi. Like,
yeah, Kawhi outplayed him in the Eastern Conference Finals, so how could he say Giannis is better than Kawhi? Yeah.
All right, so us being in Wisconsin, what are your actual realistic expectations? And you and I, like, I guess I would identify as a Bucks fan. You and I aren't diehard Bucks fans. No. I think that's just kind of what happens when you work with this stuff every day. But, I mean, is it going to be a disappointment if this team is not in the NBA Finals?
No, I mean, I'm not picking them to go. So I think it would be given the Marcus Smart injury, I think it would be a pretty big disappointment if they didn't get to the East Finals.
Yes, totally agree. I think there would be people who would argue and say they should make the finals based on how they played, record-wise, all that would indicate it. But I'm with you. I wouldn't be surprised if they made the finals, but I wouldn't look at this season as a massive disappointment, especially going forward. Like, it's not like Giannis is 32 years old and this is your last run. You know, I mean, who knows what could happen, but it doesn't really feel like this is a make-or-break year for Milwaukee.
I think, like, a very just down-the-middle performance would be them getting to the East Finals and losing a very competitive series.
Yeah.
If they do more than that, it's a huge success. If they do less than that, it's a failure to some degree.
Yes. If they were to make the finals and get swept by Golden State, I don't think that's a failure.
Oh, no. No. They get to the finals, that's a huge, huge win.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.